Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Blind Ambition with Jack Kelly. It's your friend Rick from Blind, and we have Erica Voss today from Capital One. She's the Vice President of Engineering and Architecture and Security, and that means she leads platform architecture and core engineering for Capital One software, an enterprise business-to-business software business at the big bank. She's responsible for the team building and expanding Capital One's technology platform. Now, before joining Capital One in 2021, Erica led leadership roles at several Fortune 500 software as a service companies, including Amazon Web Services, Microsoft, Oracle, and Salesforce, where she was responsible for various global enterprise security and compliance programs. Erica most recently led the Global Incident Response Program at Salesforce. So all companies certainly that are users of Blind, we've all heard of them. And so thank you so much for coming on the show, Erica, to kind of share your wisdom and walk us through your career arc.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rick. I'm excited to be here.
And speaking of the career arc, okay, this has to be a first for us. We have, 60, 70, 100, podcasts, and we haven't found somebody until now. I know Rick kind of left that out, but to me, that is so awesome. That's so amazing. Could you, if you don't mind, how did that happen? And then how did you segue from that into tech?
Yeah, it's a fun story, Jack, and it's kind of unique. So what's interesting is, I actually graduated from high school, three sisters, parents sat all of us down and were like, you can go to college now, we'll pay for it, or you can go to college later in life, you're going to pay for it. And I was like, I'm going to go make money as a good 18-year-old, college or high school graduate. And so I actually went to become a nanny, which is kind of interesting. And so I had a newborn and I had a two-year-old that I was taking care of, did that for about 5 years. And then the family moved to France and asked me to go with them. And I was like, no, I'm going to go back home and get a job. So came back home, applied for a role at Department of Corrections as a corrections officer. And somebody said, why would you ever want to go work in corrections? And I was like, why not? I feel like that could be a fun journey. Like, I'm a law-abiding citizen. I, believe in the rules and the policies and the procedures, all that stuff. And, maybe I was thinking about pursuing a career in law enforcement. And so applied for the role, got the job. And I was like, okay, this is pretty cool. And my first role as an officer was working for McNeil Island. And I remember sticking on this uniform, riding this boat, this like ferry across the water there in Washington State. And then, the steel bars actually open like you see in the movies. I walk through, it clanked behind me. And then next thing you know, I'm standing in like this yard, this like massive backyard. And there's like 1200 inmates around me. And I have a radio and a pair of handcuffs. And I was like, I might not have thought this through.
Wait, did they give you like training to do beforehand?
Yes. Or? So you do get training. You get to go to a corrections officer academy, but there was a backlog for the academy. So I had to work as an officer first without any like real formal training until I actually went to the academy, which was interesting. So I was in uniform for 2.5 weeks before I went to the officer's academy, the corrections officer academy, but still it was like, okay, like, wow, I'm in a yard and this is all I have is the radio and a set of handcuffs. And I have 1200, grown men that are like, looking at me like, well, what are you going to do? And I'm thinking, well, what am I going to do?
So it was men. I wasn't sure.
Yeah, it was men, Jack. And I actually ended up doing a closed custody intensive management unit. So I actually worked all over the state, Washington State Penitentiary. I worked for King County Jail. I worked for a variety of different like organizations around corrections and, transported the worst of the worst. The people had to be locked down 23 hours a day and required a 3-man escort. But it was always close custody men, the maximum security men. It's funny to say, but like, that was my sweet spot. That's where I was good. That's where I loved what I was doing and enjoyed it. And so I did that for 13 and a half years. So, promoted through the ranks, officer, sergeant, acting lieutenant stuff, like had a really good, great career and really enjoyed, just engaging with the people and understanding the behavior aspects of it. And then, and unfortunately one of those situations ended up getting hurt at work, in like an actual situation. And then as I was out on light duty, I was like, what do I want to do? Like the goal was always to be a prison warden or, maybe go the captain route, but it was like, is this really what I want to do with my life? And so while I was on light duty, I went to our headquarters and actually had to present a class on preparedness, on emergency preparedness. Talked about, you know, how you can be prepared, talked about making sure you have good presence, you know, confidence, all these things. And your verbal skills were huge. And actually, of course, inside a prison. And our chief information security officer actually talked to me after the class and said, hey, have you ever thought about doing tech? And I was like, nope. And I was like, it was very like, nope, no interest. And he was like, well, what about disaster recovery business continuity? And I was like, I don't know who you are, nice sir, but like, I'm in a maximum security prison. And like, you know, it's July, it's gorgeous outside. Like I'm working in a uniform outside, basically, you know, making sure, you know, my entire shift of 2,400 inmates, quite frankly, are not going to like riot. Like, I don't know what disaster recovery or business continuity is. So he said, let's have a conversation. I think there's a skill set you have. And I was like, okay. So he set up time, you know, had a phone call with me basically like 2 weeks later, asked me to come back down to headquarters, took me into this data center room where there was this massive mainframe. And he was like, what do you think about recovering that? And I was like, what the hell is that? I mean, it was just like this moment of like, I don't even know what that is. And he's like, it's a mainframe. It's how we actually track all of our offenders, all of our inmates throughout Washington State. And I was like, this is interesting. But I was like, how would you recover that? Like, I'm looking at all these cables and wires and blinking lights. And I'm thinking, I have a badge, a uniform, great verbal leadership skills, and can like run an entire shift, you know, 24 hours a day. Like, what is this going to do for me? What is this going to teach me? And he was like, that's the piece I want in you. You have the ability to connect with people. And he's like, and when you think about disaster recovery and business continuity, I need you to connect with people to make sure the system is up and running and that they have a plan to recover that. So that was the intersection to getting into it. So when I got injured, he talked to me about the spot. You know, he said, hey, why don't you think about coming to do this, what they call IT systems training position. So it's kind of like a training program. And he's like, you know, it's 18 months long. You could come in as an entry level. You could figure it out. And I was like, I don't know. And then I started looking at going, oh, do I want to go back and work shift work? Like I was working Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. Do I want to go back to the 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. shift and then get mandatory for overtime and work until 6 a.m. the next day? But it was actually a hard moment in my life where I had to really decide. Like I loved working inside the prison, as weird as that sounds, but it was like, I thrived in that culture. It was good. It was, you know, engaging. It was never the same thing every day. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't monotonous to me. It was, you know, paying attention to people, process. It was paying attention to your surroundings and, you know, teaching new people. So like there was a whole element to it that I loved from a leadership capacity. And so I had like this long conversation with my partner at the time, and she was like, I think you should take the role. And she's like, you know, if it doesn't work out, you could always go back to uniform, which was true. So applied for the role, actually got the role, and then ended up going into it. And day two of working in there, we actually lost our entire active directory from basically a malicious employee. And my CISO basically said, you will never see this again in your career, but this is like, grab the red binder. We're going to a war room. So in some level, it was an introduction to the same thing of what I was doing. It was a different type of preparedness. It was a different type of response. So I grabbed my red binder and it was like pocket protector and all, and down the war room we went. And it was kind of funny. And yeah, like we had to recover it. And then what was the response plan and the process? And as I was, you know, watching it and listening to people scream and yell and shout, I was like, hold on here. Like, where's the organization? And kind of like opened my voice up from like being inside the prison and was like, who's in charge? You can't have 50 people in charge. Who's running this incident? Who is the commander? Who is going to make decisions? What is this network bubble? What is this security bubble? Like started asking questions and then ended up, you know, our CIO at the time was like, who the hell are you? And I was like, I'm trying to get organized chaos here for you. Like you have 50 people responding to something I'm assuming is bad because I don't know, it's day two in my job, but like you gave me a plan and no one is following this plan. Like we're not going to be well, like, recovered here if we don't start following the plan. So she actually like paused and my boss was like, probably not the person you should have said that to. And I was like, I don't know who she is. So like there was like this moment of like, that's going to probably be career limiting suicide for you or something, but it ended up working to my advantage. So we put the structure in place. We started walking through the plan. I like went down the hall, printed off copies. Here's our disaster recovery plan. And then was lucky. Like that's kind of where my intro to tech really happened. But then it became almost the intro to my journey of like falling in love with tech.
You know, it's such an amazing story. And there's a lot to go over with it. But one takeaway, Rick, I'm curious how you feel about this too. I run a search firm, been doing this like 25 years. And the frustrating thing for candidates is that when they have a non-traditional background, yep. they're just literally not viewed. You know, they won't even look at the resume. They're like, okay, you don't have exactly what, you know, you want, we want. So forget it. You don't even have a chance. So this is one of the best arguments I ever heard for taking somebody, not because they have the exact skills, because, you know, you look at a resume and you look at a job description, you have to meet everything. Yeah. Trust me, I'm not exaggerating. It's even worse than the way I'm saying it. And your story shows that, hey, you can get leadership skills, management skills, thrive under pressure, and that crosses over and people should look at that more. So I think this is, I love the story, right, Rick? I mean, this is really interesting.
No, I think that's exactly right, because I think it's very easy for people, especially in the tech industry. I'm just going to go out on a limb and say it. But they're used to what they're used to, right? And so they look to their left, they look to their right, and they look and say, oh, well, all of these software engineers, they went to college and they studied computer science.
Went to Stanford, went to MIT,
let me tap internship on the shoulder.
Right. And I it's a known quantity. I know what I'm getting. I might have been in the same classes as they were, had the same professor, had the same internships. And so, like, you don't have to guess, right? Whereas if someone does a boot camp or self-learned, you're like, oh, well, do they really know, or how do they learn, or what do they actually know how to do? And there's this kind of like impatience or this like inability to say, like, oh, I don't want to like bother to figure out if your skills translate, which is such a like complete waste of like talent. And it's just such a missed opportunity.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, because we were talking in like one of our team building meetings here, and I was telling my team, I can teach anybody tech, but I cannot teach people skills. I cannot teach leadership. I cannot teach, and you both are spot on. You cannot teach how to thrive under pressure. So like, folks who burn out so fast, they look at somebody like me and they're just like, oh my God, you're the Energizer Bunny, you're still going. And I'm like, you have not experienced real stress. I'm not discrediting if there's an outage that's stressful, but like, can you make a decision under pressure? Like, in some level, like, I always pride the fact of my prison journey has taught me how to be a phenomenal leader more than anything, because to your point, like you said, Jack and Rick, it's, I can thrive under pressure. I can make a decision. I can quantify it with data now, and then look at the tech and go, okay, where do we need to pivot to the next thing? Versus, well, Erica, you didn't grow up as a software engineer. You don't understand cloud platforms, or you don't understand the challenges. And it's like, I can read a book like everybody else, and I can read, you know, SRE availability like everybody else. It's that you can teach the tech, but you can't teach how to connect with people. And that I actually think is a lost cause that we have this day and age. I think, you know, in some level, COVID has done great things for evangelizing tech to be better, but it's also hurt people in being able to connect with people still. And you can't find that skill set. That's not something that you're going to teach in a college anymore.
Now, how did you make that crossover, that first crossover into, let's say, the official tech world? How did you do that? How did it work? Did people look at you funny? Did you feel awkward?
I did. So once I got the role, and then I ended up going to speak at a conference down in Las Vegas and talked about how you could use like FEMA's incident command system structure into IT events. Wow. And so that was like the real moment where afterwards, I mean, I was a state government employee. I was going to be like every other person in Washington State and work for the state. It was a good job, good career. And quite frankly, like, I was going to be content making $75,000 a year for the rest of my life. That was what you did. And so at this conference, I had somebody come up to me afterwards and was like, hey, what you're talking about with disaster recovery is different. It's not the norm. And like, why would you use the structure, and how does that take shape for tech teams? And ended up having this full-on conversation with this guy, and he connected with me on LinkedIn, which then I learned what LinkedIn was. And, you know, I had like a small profile photo, and I think it was even like me back in the day in my officer uniform. And I was like, I'm a trainer. That was like the big thing to talk about. I could train. And so he connected with me, and then he reached out a couple months later and said, hey, I've got a role. I'm interested in you coming back, you know, to do all things around, you know, IT disaster recovery, and figure out how we're going to do some of this, you know, this stuff called the cloud, which is, you know, infrastructure as a service, by way back in the day when it first started. and like work with GSA around FedRAMP. And I was like, all foreign words to me, but the role sounds interesting. And so ended up interviewing for the role, was lucky, got the opportunity, got the offer, learned also when you go through those opportunities, it's good to ask questions. I was still pretty young and didn't ask any questions, which led me to Fairfax, Virginia, because the role was in Fairfax, Virginia. So I relocated. Yeah, surprise. I'm, you know, telling my partner at the time, I'm like, hey, I'm moving to Virginia. And she's like, our daughter is a senior in high school. Like, good luck, have fun. I'll see you in a year. And I was like, we could totally make this work long distance, which naturally, of course, we did, because, you know, we've been together now 17 years. But it was interesting. So I packed up, I moved back east and rented an apartment and went to work for a company. And that's all I did, was everything IT disaster recovery, and then started breaking down systems and started talking about how do we recover and like, what is SLA? And by the way, what is a recovery time objective or recovery point? What are we doing around data and data protection? And that was the real introduction, because I ended up getting massively high profile clients, because the luxury of prison, people like to connect to me because I was a realist. I was personable. I was an extrovert. I was outgoing. There wasn't a filter with me. I was going to tell you the truth. Like, your backup plan sucks. I mean, you know, and might have sometimes had some colorful words when we were going through an exercise, but like, there was no BS with me. And that actually created my path for me a little bit more, because people felt like they could relate to that. Like, oh, you're going to give me the good, the bad, and the ugly, but you actually want to roll up your sleeves and help me fix it. And I was like, yes, that's what I'm here to do, is to help you fix it. I want you to not feel an outage or feel the pain, or I want you to be able to recover. And so that's really where I got my true IT journey. So those moments of the mainframe, you know, experience I had at a state level, or that Active Directory incident, introduced me into really understanding response and preparedness, and why it's important to think about, you know, it's great, you can build cool, innovative things, but if that thing breaks, how you recover from that could make or break your business. And that's where it really became fun for me. And that's what opened the doors to go work for these Fortune 500 companies that I've been lucky to work for. And I've had a great career, but I still want to do more. I still want to change industry.
Just to take a pause there for a sec, you know, Rick and Erica, think about, it's so interesting. So you had two people, I think sometimes luck plays such a great part of things. Mm-hmm. So you had two people, two guys who kind of out of nowhere, like you didn't know them, basically turned you on to things that led you to this career path, which is now, is there something that you did for that to happen, or is it just right place, right time?
Yeah, I actually do think it's the right place and the right time. And I think there's also an element now where you can kind of create your right place and right time too. But for me, I truly say my journey into tech was because I had, you know, quite frankly, two people who saw something in me and said, I'm going to take a chance on this person. They might not be 100% amazing, but based on, you know, presenting to an audience or presenting a training class, there's a skill set there that she has that I'm looking for. And it was different for them. And I think it was the appeal of, you know, having the confidence, having the presence, which are things I learned, you know, from working inside a prison system, that made me, you know, stronger for these people to go, I could teach her something, but like the fact that she's willing to go into a room and is confidence and has confidence of who is in the room, like that was huge for them to say, okay, we could teach her how to do this job and she'll take it and run with it. And I did each and every time. Was okay, this is the challenge. Okay, if I don't know it, I'm going to tell you I don't know, but I'm going to go learn it. And that's what I would do. I would spend the time going to learn it.
Rick, Erica, what do you think of this? You know, I grew up in a very kind of working class area in New York. And a lot of my relatives, family are very blue collar kind of workers. And I think in tech and in society, people look down upon people who are, you know, kind of blue collar, you know, rough around the edges. But I find out from personal experience, they're really super smart. I mean, they're not going to ace their SATs, but they just, like, they know how to lead. They know how to talk to people. They're mm-hmm. street smart. They understand. And just like we talked earlier, this is like another argument for like, hey, we have to be more open in terms of hiring different kinds of people. You know, maybe if you don't, just because you don't have a college degree or you didn't go to the right college or what have you, you get, you know, get passed over, but they're losing out on talent. Because we talk about DEI, right? But then you don't think of things like, okay, what about somebody who is like in a rural area that's kind of odd person out? You got to think of that person too. You know what I mean? Or someone who's a correction officer who, like, okay, we got to think of these people too, right, Rick? I mean, you don't see that as much.
Yeah,
and Meta and all these places. Or are they there?
No, we simply don't, right? Because like the industry still has a lot of work to do in terms of, you know, not only like what we look like, but also like our backgrounds, right? So it wasn't until recently, I would say during the COVID-19 pandemic, that some tech companies were willing to look at folks, especially for entry-level roles, that didn't attend college, right? Yeah. Or maybe didn't attend college, but had 10, 5, 10, 15 years of work experience, that they could come in as like a senior or experienced professional. So it's like, mm-hmm. even some of these basic things that are kind of like, well, this person has had a successful career for 5, 10, 15 years. Does it matter that they didn't go to college? Like, no, they were clearly like an engineer or clearly an accountant or clearly a PR professional. Like, we should just hire them and look at, you know, their what they've been able to achieve and their outcomes. And that's only a recent last 2-3 year phenomenon.
That's new.
Remarkable. It's embarrassing, to be frank.
You miss out on such good talent.
Right. I think we also have like a problem with like veterans as well, right? Where people have this stereotype of veterans as like, oh, well, you're just out in the field and you're like shooting at things. Where really like the military has its own like basically society, right? There's jobs, every type of jobs, there's IT jobs, there's tech jobs within the military. And a lot of folks don't realize that or remember that. And they struggle to even recognize that. And so you have like veterans that have difficulty struggling or transitioning into civilian life after their service. And
Rick, you're so right.
It's these little things, right? That I think if we like kind of like deconstruct things and just say like at your base level, like what can you do? What have you achieved?
Yeah.
And just go from there. I think we'd be all a lot better.
Yeah. So there's this guy who I was working to help place in compliance at, you know, major bank. And he was so frustrated because he was telling me he was in the military and don't laugh. I don't know, like whatever these things are, but like he ran, you know, oversaw this big battalion of X amount of people. And it was, you know, huge. It would be like the equivalent of being in a company and you're running like what, you know, Eric was doing is in terms of like, you know, 100 people, 200 people. And then he couldn't even get like an interview for a, you know, independent person, you know, doing X, you know, that wasn't so great. And he was just like, Jack, I don't get it. I've managed like 100 people, you know, I've been in tours of duty. And
he's spot on though.
And he was so frustrated. He ended up going to, I think, the police or whatever, but he didn't want to. He really thought he could go over and go into, you know, Wall Street and do something there because of that experience. But no, didn't.
It's fascinating though, but you guys are saying the right thing. And that's the funny part about it. Like, I remember my first manager job that I interviewed for. I remember like the advice was, you know, think twice, speak once, always remember your audience, you know, dress for the job you want, not the job you have, when I was going into the interview process. And one of the questions was, tell me about a time you've led, you know, a massive organization. And so I talked about my prison experience and they were like, no, like a time you led people. And I go, I'm running a shift of 147 officers. And by the way, I'm managing risk of 2,400 inmates not rioting. Like, here's the transferable skill for you. And they were like, so you don't think you've led teams? And I was like,
oh my God, was that person serious? But, like, that's insane.
But they were. And like, that was like, I will never forget some of these like first time job interviews I had transitioning from like going from consultant and like interviewing. And it was like some of these questions that I was like, you gotta be kidding me. And it was like, well, yeah, but like, you don't like, how are you driving down risk? And I was like, I don't have a prison rioting. Like, that's a loss of life. That's a loss of technology. Like, that's public relations nightmare for,
like, this is, you know, real stuff. Like, when you talk about this, is real life, real stuff.
To that guy, I can feel that same pain. And I think even today in 2023, that pain is still there. And I think that's what's interesting for folks is, how do you change that mindset? How do you change that shift? And like, I am a firm believer of saying, I will talk to anybody and everybody all the time. And everyone's like, you need to stop talking to people. And I was like, I love to talk to people. You get to know them as a person. And when you talk to them, you get to know them as a person. You can hear their story and you could hear their journey. And then you think to yourself, there's something in there that I'm resonating with. Well, then when you get that role open of even an entry level, I go back to that person. I'm like, I got an opportunity here for you. Do you have interest? That person is going to work 100 times harder, faster, smarter, and better because they know it's an opportunity to do something amazing. And it's like, I will take a team of 500 of those people every day and grow them over the next 10 years. Then like, great. I just hired John or Sarah right out of MIT, who quite frankly feels a little bit of entitlement of, I'm a software engineer and I'm looking for $400,000 a year. Okay, but what have you delivered? By the way, why are you not looking me in the eye when I'm interviewing you? And it's like, you're too busy on social media and 10 other things. No, thank you. And everyone's like, ooh, you're losing out on talent. Am I? Am I really losing out on talent? They can't focus on me.
I do have to ask, was there a point in your career where people didn't say like, what the heck are you doing here? Or like, you know, like these like weird, like, well, what did you really do? Like, at what point did those kind of just go away and you were able to just like,
oh my gosh,
convince them? Did it ever go away?
I don't know that I would say it 100% ever went away. So I do think at times there are still pockets, and I'll give you, here's an interesting example. So I'm a huge ally. I believe strong in allyship, and everybody has a voice. Everybody has something to say in some fashion. I don't believe you need a seat at the table. I believe, you know, build your own table or bring it, like go do it. So what's interesting is when I go and do conference presentations or speaking events sometimes that are like out in, you know, the public, so to speak, I show up, you know, slacks, button down t-shirt, I wear a tie. And so I get met with the pause of like, okay, so like, how do you identify? And I'm like, I'm America, I'm a she, her. And they're just like, but then why do you wear a tie? And also like, are you pushing to be the LGBT person in tech? Or are you pushing to be like, you just want to push the boundaries to make people uncomfortable? And I go, I'm just a technology leader, period. I am here to lead and share my story and share my journey and talk about what that looks like. Like, just because you're choosing to judge me based on the fact that I wear a tie, who cares? Would you prefer I wear a bow tie? Would you prefer, like,
that's so rude, by the way. Like, for someone to say that, right?
Like, but yet in some fashion, like, it's funny. Society still kind of looks at that of like, you're showing up. When I was, you know, working for as a consulting agency, I showed up for my first presentation and my boss was like, oh my God, you wore a tie. And I go, yeah, I feel like, look, I look good. I'm sharply dressed. I've showered. I'm here. Like, I'm going to nail this presentation. He's like, why do you have a tie on? Like, he was more uncomfortable. And I was like, it's because that's me. That's me as who I am. Like, I'm comfortable in who I am. My presence, confidence, like, I'm going to go in, I'm going to deliver this great presentation. And so we did. And I ended up landing the client. And the client's like, yeah, we are excited to work with Erica. My boss was still like, I can't believe you landed that. And I was like, I can't believe you are still hung up on a tie. Like, seriously. But like, it was, and that was only 10 years ago. And so like, think about that. That's still only 10 years ago. And I'm still, and so there's still a little bit of that challenge today, which is unfortunate. But yeah, so I don't know that it's ever really going to go away. I think that's to your point, Rick, like what you're saying, it's like, how do we change industry in some regards? That's where the industry and, you know, the tech industry, we have to kind of mature a little bit, like separate from being a corrections officer. When I went back to school, I was a janitor. I was an administrative assistant. So there's my organizational skills. And as a janitor, like, I learned to work hard and like get things done in a certain time frame. And so when I walk into buildings, I acknowledge everybody and everyone's like, oh, like, look at you, like, you're so social. And I was like, it's not social. It's just, we're human. And like, it's good to acknowledge people and just say, hi, how are you? But you need to mean it. And so it's just like, my career has been an incredible journey and I'm thankful and blessed for where I'm at today. But I'm also like, we need to be better. We need to change industry for better. And how are we going to do it? We got to do it collectively as a group.
And so I'm curious, like, now that you are, you know, quote unquote, have that seat at the table, at the front of the table, you know, like, what are the different things that you do to kind of like create this kind of culture within your own teams? Like, how does it affect your hiring and your the mentorship and like the how you grow your team and kind of develop there?
Yeah. For me, by far, like, I share my passion about working in tech. I share you know, here's what my journey has been. It's different for everybody. I think that's the important thing to really resonate, especially when you're building a team and hiring, is everybody's got their own journey. I think even in tech, you need to make it part of your DNA of like, who are you? Like, people ask that question, well, what are you like as a leader? And I think you've got to be able to exude that, especially now in this day and age, through a Zoom call. You're not really interviewing anybody in person anymore. It's like kind of gone to the wayside. So you're now needing to sell that person on why they want to come work for you. And I mean, do you want to come work for the person who's going to show up on the call? Hi. So I have a couple questions for you. And they're like scripted questions. And you're just like, God, is this where I want to work? Versus, hey, how are you? Like, there's some energy that you can feel with the person, even through a Zoom call, where you're like, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I think I want to work for that company or that person. And I think that's part of what we need to do, is make it part of your DNA, be passionate about what you do. Like, I consistently tell people still to this day, I love what I do. I love working in tech. I want to change tech to be for the better, of course. And the day that I no longer believe that is probably the day I will get out of tech. But then I still want to go teach people how to work in tech. So I still have a tie that I always have around tech. But I think it's that, and looking at, you know, your team dynamics, what are the background and what is the skill set you're looking for? And, you know, do you have a role that is so technical that you need a super deep tech person? Or do you have a role that is so technical you'd be okay with someone who's got, like you said, 3 or 4 years of experience, but no degree, but also can connect with a person? Like, I would take that person hands down more than likely over the person who's been phenomenally in tech for 50 years. And yes, they can deliver 10,000 things, but if you still can't connect with one person, like, it's hard. I think that creates the challenge for you. So I think it's a lot of that, being able to talk to people about what your story is, the journey of where your company is going, and what I call like developing that rhythm of business muscle. It's, you got to be able to understand what that looks like and how can you build, run, and maintain as fast as what your business is doing, and being able to articulate that back to people is, that's how you really grow and skill talent on a team, and then also hire for your team.
And can you share your pitch, if you have one, for if someone is like interviewing with you and, you know, like, you could tell that maybe they're like not so sure, maybe they have some other offers, right? Or maybe they're telling you, you know, they're interviewing elsewhere and they're waiting to hear back. Like, what's your pitch for someone to join your team?
Oh my gosh. My pitch by far is like, let me tell you where we're going and growing. Like, that's the big thing. And I have this little thing, I call it the triple D. And so, you know how there's diners, drive-ins, and dives.
Yes.
So my thing is, let me tell you what your triple D is going to be. What are you going to do on my team? What are you going to drive to execution? And what are you going to deliver with excellence? And like, that's the pitch. That's what lands people. They're like, oh my God, there's a vision. There's a path. There's deliverables I can hear. There's a chance for me to execute really well. There's an opportunity to be on a team that is, you know, changing and doing things for better. There's, you know, a super passionate leader. I talk about, you know, career development and training and goals. And I'm like, you're going to come in, and in your first 90 days, like, we are going to do your triple D, and we're going to talk about your career development and the books I want you to read and the free training courses that are out there. Like, it's not just you investing in me. It's also me investing in you. And people don't get that anymore. And I think that's the sweet spot. So telling people, here's your triple D, they're kind of like, what? And then they hear it and they're like, I'm in, let's go. Yeah, triple D I coined about 7 years ago. And that's kind of been the pitch that I've taken with me every spot I've ever worked at is here's what it is. Here's the triple D. Here's what we're going to do. Here's what we're going to drive. Here's what you're going to deliver. Because people want to hear, what can they actually own and be successful at? And so when you have a plan, that resonates. Not, well, we're all working towards a common architecture and there's a team of 52. Like, you don't hear, well, what do I get to do? Because that's what tech is. We want to do something exciting. We want to change something and be innovative and, you know, be like, this is cool. And I'm working on the sexy project. And that's what it is. So you gotta have your pitch to get that person.
I mean, I'm imagining myself, I'm getting like really excited. I'm imagining myself in an interview with you. And like, one of the questions that I think of, especially with like platform architectures, kind of security, business continuity, it's unpredictable. So can you give us insight into how you personally juggle work and life, you know, as you've gotten in these like progressively more senior roles, these like kind of more higher impact, more like consequential roles and larger companies, you know, have you seen throughout your career that you've been spending more time at work? Has the stress gotten like higher over time? Or like, how do you manage all of that?
Yeah, I don't You know, funny, oddly enough, Rick, I don't know that I would say my job has gotten any more stressful, because I think for me, I always look back at like what Jack said, like my job was stressful when I was in the prison. My job now is not stressful. My job that has the stress is really like, how do we make sure we're picking the right technologies? How do we make sure we're doing what's best for the business, driving down risk, that we're adopting good industry best practices, you know, to be well-governed or well-managed? Or how do we say that, you know, for Capital One Software as an enterprise B2B business, here's what we're doing that is great for our customers, or here's our, you know, data management solution that's actually going to make you operate better in the cloud, you know? So that's really what my challenge is more about, how do I keep my team motivated that we're doing the right cool things and we're working on all the good stuff? And so I think that's probably been the biggest and the interesting thing for me, especially this day and age, is that each role I've had has given me more opportunities to lead bigger teams, bigger projects, bigger things at scale, despite, you know, if, you know, people can look and go, oh gosh, you're this place for 2 years, this place for 2.5 years. And it's like, but if you look, I have a traditional tech resume. Like I've grown my scope. I've continued to grow and lead and build a skill set and continue to manage large, you know, cloud journeys or things like that, or transformation. That is what we want to do. And that is what we should be doing. And we should be excited about that. If it's stressful, then we're doing something wrong. And so for me, like life balance is, I have an incredible life balance working for Capital One Software. Like I don't have, you know, the stresses I think probably that most people do in this day and age, because if you love what you do, it's not stressful. And I think that comes back to who you are as a person and what's part of your DNA is, if you're passionate about the work that you do, it's not work. And I think that's the difference of what it is. And, you know, I look forward to, like, you know, the next big thing that I get to take on and lead, or, you know, what's going to be, you know, what does my career look like even 5 or 10 years from now? But it's like, that journey is still comes back to those, what I call nail the basics. I've got people leadership. I've got, you know, I can handle crisis events and probably make better decisions faster than most people could who've been in crisis management, you know, or new to a crisis management leadership spot. Because I go back to my old mindset of like, all right, what's the process? What's the procedures? What's the tech? You know, are we shutting things down correctly? Do I have a customer impact? And so it's all those things where I think I've never felt like I've not belonged, but I've also never felt like I've been in a role where, like, dear God, I am stressed out to the max. Prison, for sure. But like, that's a life or death situation every day that I would deal with walking into the doors. So for me, I don't look at the role I have today or any role that I've had has been life or death. And so I think that's actually a strength that I bring to, hey, we're going to solve this. And this problem might take us 9 months, but we're going to have a good time solving it. But we're actually going to be able to solve it because, you know, in my mindset, I think no one's going to die at the end of this day. And it's just a different mindset.
No, I appreciate that, because I think, you know, we have a lot of listeners, a lot of like blind users in the community that are at this kind of like middle stage in the career. They're deciding whether they want to jump shift to an even larger company.
Yep.
Or they're trying to figure out, oh, is now the right time to kind of head on this management track?
Yeah.
And they're a little bit anxious about the added scope of work and responsibility and
yep.
how that might infect their, you know, their personal well-being, right? But
yeah,
it seems like there's three different things that I almost kind of want to summarize, right? One is, if you just look at your basic skills, right? The foundation yes. that you've had, like, things can be stressful because you've seen them already. And you've done them, and deep down in your heart, you actually know how to achieve them, right? So it's almost yes. like breaking it down,
yes,
and kind of taking it one step at a time, right? To not get correct. Overwhelmed.
Yeah.
And then the second is just having that like confidence in yourself, right? And being able to say, like, I actually quite like this. So it doesn't feel like a chore. It doesn't feel like work.
Yeah.
Right. And then the third is also just having like a great team around you and saying yes. like, oh, I actually don't have to do it by myself, right?
Correct.
Like, you have other folks that are right there with you that you trust, that also trust yep. you.
Yeah.
And together you can achieve great things.
Yeah. And you're spot on. And I think that's the piece that when people always talk about wanting to get into management, I always ask people, do you want to manage or do you want to be a leader? And they're like, it's one and the same. And I was like, it's not. They're two very different things. You could be a manager and manage a team of five day in and day out and be content with that. A leader is you're managing large scale organizations, you're dealing with multiple behaviors, you're dealing with multiple, you know, obstacles, objectives, or deliverables, and you've got multiple challenges, and you're being pulled 18 different ways, you don't get to be in the tactical weeds anymore as a manager. Your job is to deliver strategic solutions. And it's different. And so when you explain that to people, it's funny, you find that the person that is like, I'm excited to manage, come back out and go, I think I just want to manage. I don't know that I ever want to lead. And I think that's the piece you have to kind of figure out when you think about getting into management or leadership is, you know, what's the path you want, but then also what's the development? You still have to develop, even if you're a manager or a leader, you have to think about your own leadership development program, and you need to be responsible for creating that. And I think, you know, when I went from manager to leader, I realized that that's where I started to realize I needed to invest in me. Do I have an executive coach? Do I have a leadership development program? Are there things from, you know, online, you know, journals or things that I can read, and picking up a magazine and understanding when someone says, hey, this is impacting your brand, what does that mean? I didn't even know I had a brand, so to speak. Like, you have to think about all those things from a leadership perspective versus, oh, hey, as a manager, sweet, I'm only responsible for my team of five, and we've got this PI planning, and like, you only have to do these 10 deliverables. Like, it's very easy to be a people manager almost on some level. It's very different to be a leader, and you have to think about that and what that looks like for you.
I mean, can I ask you for your advice? This is something that took me a long time to kind of transition through, and realize is that transition between like managing like responsibilities and like functions to managing people, to managing outcomes. And that last part was like very challenging for me, right? Because I thought, oh, my work would speak for itself. You know,
right.
Like, if I just do all the little things, surely it would add up. Like, I'm doing the right things directionally. You know, surely like it would make outsized impact or make business impact or be consequential. But, you know, oftentimes it didn't. And I had to like bang my head against the wall so many times. Like, can you break it down for us and how you learned to kind of like elevate your leadership style and your management?
Yeah, definitely. When I think about the outcomes, I like to break down the outcome as what is the thing we're going to deliver, and like what does success look like when we actually deliver it? And so that's where you need to make sure you're partnering with the right stakeholders, understand who's your customers. Like, when I look at my team, for example, we own, you know, platform engineering for Capital One Software. And it's like, everybody then is a customer of my platform, right? The application teams run on top of me. So my customer reach is massive. And so I could have an application team that needs a certain outcome, but that could be very different than my business operations team. And so for me, what I do is I spend the time getting my customer feedback and almost like do an internal like customer review with them of like, here's the outcomes we've agreed upon. Here's the breakdown of the deliverables, the time frame. Here's the resources or the funding that is needed. Are we in agreement that this is what success looks like for you? Once you say this is what success looks like for you, it's funny, the conversation changed. It's like, well, no, I actually don't care about those three things. Okay, but those three things are tied to this one outcome that you say is a big thing. And it's like, is that big thing still the top thing? And like, when you start kind of pushing and pulling on the thread, that's where you really find out what is success. And to your point, that's what I'm teaching my senior leadership team is you have to understand your customer requirements, but also your business requirements, and then go back and say, what's the outcome you're going to deliver upon that? Because to your point, if not, I watch them. We're going to boil the ocean. We're not going to deliver anything. Performance management's going to go around, and I'm going to have an entire organization going, well, I didn't deliver anything. And then they start freaking out. And then you've got this massive churn that runs so quick through your org. And then you're still looking at it going, well, God, what did we deliver? Well, that's because you didn't solidify the outcomes. And so that's that customer mindset is really what's key for me. And that's kind of the piece that I teach back to, like I said, my senior leadership team, and even the organizations that I've worked for in the past. It's your customer of my service offering. And my service offering is platform engineering, cloud, you know, cybersecurity, whichever. It's here's how the outcomes are going to be delivered for you to be successful. And then once they hear that, that's what they're looking for. What can you take off my plate versus, oh crap, you're going to make me do the work with you? Yep. Yep. We're in this together.
No, I appreciate that. I think I'm curious, are there any things that kind of the promotion that you're most proud of earning through your career, like the outcome that you're most excited of having accomplished or achieved? Like, how did you earn that?
Yeah, I mean, from a work perspective, I think going from director to senior director was probably the big thing. I feel like when you're a director, you're kind of still managing things. And when you become like a senior director and then naturally, of course, vice president, it's you're actually viewed as a leader. You no longer actually get to say no. Your job is to now solve regardless. And so you have layers underneath you that you have to make sure you have your pulse on the org to understand what's getting done. And so I think that was kind of like the transition for me to realize, oh my gosh, I'm no longer a manager. I'm now actually a leader. Like, my brand mattered. You know, think twice, speak once mattered. Knowing my audience, you know, mattered. Dressing for the job I had, not the job I wanted, mattered. Because people look to me as like, you're a senior leader in this organization. And in my mind, I was always like, I'm just a director, or I'm just the senior director, where it was like, oh my gosh, you're the senior director that's now going to present a solution to a president. Like, that's a different thing. And that's a different outcome. And so that by far would be the biggest transition, I think, for me from a career perspective. And then personally, just, I mean, getting my doctorate to me was huge, just because I did it while working. And I remember like realizing when I got the graduation notice of like, you've achieved this, of like, this was crazy. I did it in 5.5 years. Like, that resonated for a quick second. And then I was like, oh my God, it took me 5.5 years. When I work with other people who took time off from work, they took a leave of absence from work to go do their doctorate. And so I think for me, realizing that I'm in academic land, I'm viewed as a subject matter expert in a thing, was kind of like, wow, I made it. But I'm still like, what's next? What's next for me?
That's a good question. So what is next? Do you have anything in mind?
You know, I don't know. Like, I naturally want to continue to lead big organizations. I, of course, naturally want to stay in tech more than anything. It's for me, it's, I want to help change industry. That's the biggest thing for me. I want to make sure we're showing up well as an organization. I want us to be better at nailing the basics and solving, you know, the hard problems that I think sometimes we forget to do. And, you know, just making sure we're really, you know, showing up well and that everybody is represented and people realize there's a voice, and, you know, that voice can matter, whether it's on a Zoom call or it's, you know, you're in person. It's everybody has something they can bring to their own table.
Now, I'm curious, have you kept in touch with the folks that got you in the tech industry? You know, the CISO in Washington State, the person that kind of scouted you at that conference?
Yeah. That's funny. So the person who scouted me in the conference, like, I don't actually know where he's at this day and age. I have looked him up a few different times on LinkedIn. And then the CISO from Washington State is actually a mentor. And I just had lunch with him 2 weeks ago.
Oh,
it was kind
That's
of
great.
It was pretty cool to go have lunch. And he was like, that was like the moment where I was like, well, what do you think, Peter? You know, like, here I am, you know, how does this look and feel? And he was just like, you were the one on the team that I told everybody, watch this one. Wow. She's going to do great things.
That's awesome.
And it like that kind of still till this day gives me chills. And it was pretty cool. Pretty cool to still be able to stay connected with him. And he was like, you were destined for great things. And you told everybody, I'm going to do great things. Just watch. And I was like, cause it's not a competition, but it is.
Do you think, Erica, that when you have somebody who believes in you, and maybe put yourself aside just generally, and maybe you're not sure how much you believe in yourself, that you feel you're going to work harder, better, smarter, because you want to prove that person right. Like, they had the faith in you and now you feel, I got to deliver, you know, I owe it to myself and I owe it to that person. Does that make sense? Is that?
Yeah, no, 1,000,000%. I definitely would say, when you find that one person that believes in you, you will, in some level, like, you will die making them see that they can believe in you. It's like, you will
it's
never-
It's like a psychological hack.
It is a psychological hack. I remember there was a person that I wanted to go work for, and I was like, I want this job and here's what I'm going to do. And I remember like there was a moment in the conversation of like, I don't know that you're the right person for this role. And I was like, I'm going to show you that I am. But like, did my homework and paid attention to the team and understand their business goals and objectives. And it was like this whole thing. And like, I read about the company and their annual 10K. Like, I did all this work to really show up prepared because I wanted them to see like, oh, you actually did it. And like, got through the whole process and got to the end, and it was incredible. Like, I got the opportunity and I was like, why did I get the opportunity? Like, I would love to hear the feedback. I'm always looking for feedback. And it was like, because you actually showed up prepared. You showed us that you cared and that you wanted to do it. And they were like, why did you pick us? For a person, you know, at the time I had, I think, two other offers. And I was like, because you gave me a chance that you believed in me of something that, for a role that I was probably 80% qualified for, you're willing to take a chance on that other 20%. And so, yeah, definitely.
And that's a different part from the other thing we talked about.
Yep.
This is almost like, excuse kind of language, it's like, F you, like, what, you don't think I could do it? I'm going to do it. And then that gets you fire yes. burning, right?
It does.
What do you mean? How dare you, your mind, you're probably thinking, how dare you question me? Yes. I'm going to do whatever it takes.
It's totally that thing. Like I do that even with my team today. Like, I tell them, I am more successful if you tell me you don't know, because you're going to go find out. That's what I'm looking for you to say to me. You can't know everything, especially in technology. Let's be real, people. But like, telling me you don't know tells me you are eager to go learn it. And like, I remember saying that to my boss, I think like a month ago. I was like, you know what? I don't know. But you know what? I'm going to go find out. And like, that resonates with somebody because they're realizing you're an open, honest person who's like, to your point, like you said, Jack, like, shit, you either know something or you don't. Okay, well, if I don't know it, I'm going to go find out. Like, that's what we need to be doing in tech. Teach people it's okay to say, I don't know.
I mean, I'm going to put a finer point on it. We need a bit more humility.
We do.
Within the industry. Oh, gosh.
Yes, we do. Some humility and some, like, be humble just a little bit.
You don't think now it's changed that's a little bit more, you know, humble? Or no, it's still...
No, confidently, no.
Yeah. I'm a Rick. I'm like a plus one.
Yeah, I mean, on Blind, you still see like, oh, is this the end of $500,000 pay compensation packages?
Right.
And, you know, it just hasn't shook out yet that like, oh, no, there are like thousands of people getting laid off every single week, right? And meanwhile, people are making memes at Google about the snacks on offer in the kitchens, right? It's just like, there's kind of like a disconnect that still exists to this day.
Yeah. It is. I mean, you could even look at the people who love being remote and now companies want you to come back. Look at the people who are boycotting. Why am I coming back? And it's like, why would you not want to be visible? Why would you not want to come back into an office you were just in 3 years ago complaining about visibility, promotion, growth, and all these things? And now it's like, hey, well, I'm coming into the office when I travel, hey, I'm coming into the office. Does anybody want to come and see me? Oh, I feel obligated to go. Why? What? Your boss is here. Why would you not want to come hang out with me?
Exactly.
Like, I'm traveling cross country. So your 2 hour drive to my, you know, 12 hour travel day, I'm not really seeing the challenge here for you. But when I think of that next leadership project, I'll be sure to find the person who did come into the office.
No, that's exactly it.
Yeah.
And I think it's the little things that really add up
over
time in your career, and they compound and they snowball. And they become this huge thing that clearly makes an outsized impact.
Yeah, 100% agree.
No, I appreciate your pearls of wisdom, Erica, and kind of you having the courage to share your experience and your story and say, like, look, like you don't have to have this like fancy degree and have this like perfect career arc. But truly, like, you can be a leader in tech, in financial services, in Fortune 500, by just staying true to yourself, but also having that confidence to say, I actually have these like basic foundational experiences that clearly apply and these skills transfer, and I'm going to show it to you.
Yep. Yes, 100%. It's so true.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thank you.
Thanks so much, Rick.
This is awesome. So much, thank you so much.
That's it for The Blind Ambition. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review. And don't forget to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.